Welcome to the Digital Identity Digest, the audio companion to the blog at Spherical Cow Consulting. I'm Heather Flanagan, and every week I break down interesting topics in the field of digital identity, from credentials and standards to browser weirdness and policy twists. If you work with digital identity but don't have time to follow every specification or hype cycle, you're in the right place. Let's get into it. And welcome back to the Digital Identity Digest. This is Heather Flanagan. And if you've been following this series, you'll remember that I've been looking at internet fragmentation recently through a variety of lenses. I mean, a couple weeks ago, I argued that internet fragmentation is happening at least three levels, technical, regulatory, and commercial. In the episode after that, I described how supply chains are a limiting factor to fragmentation more than the technology itself is. So today, we're going to zoom out in a whole other direction, because I want to argue that even if the protocols line up perfectly and the chips get made, there's another piece of the puzzle that really decides what kind of internet we'll have in the future, and that's people. More to the point, demographics. Who shows up to build tomorrow's systems? Who has the engineers, the designers, the startup founders? Who has enough young people coming into the workforce to keep innovation going? And who doesn't, right? This is something where you need to think about not what's happening now, but what happens in 15 years? So the short version is the countries that built and heavily influenced the early internet, right? The US, the EU, Japan, more recently China, they're all aging. Some are even shrinking. Meanwhile, the regions with the youngest and fastest growing populations, Africa and parts of South Asia, they're not even in the room where the standards are written. And that gap matters, because the absence of those voices today is going to shape what kind of internet we all inherit tomorrow. So let's start with the US, right? For decades, it's been the global hub for internet talent, right? Silicon Valley thrived not just because of venture capital, but because brilliant people from all over the world came to build there. But the domestic talent pipeline, right? That's seriously springing some leaks. US students lag international peers in math and science. Graduate programs are still strong, but they're overwhelmingly filled with international students. And when those students finish, many want to stay. But immigration backlogs, the H-1B caps, the green card queues make it a lot harder to do so. So even inside the standards community, the demographics are aging, right? The IATF's own community survey shows longtime contributors heading for retirement and not nearly enough young participants coming in. If the U.S. can't fix its education and immigration pipelines, its leadership won't slip because someone outmaneuvers Washington. It'll slip because there just aren't enough people to do the work. China's story, it's different, but it's no less stark, right? For decades, China's growth was powered by a huge working age population. That demographic dividend, we'll call it, is gone, right? Fertility has fallen to barely one child per woman. The working age population peaked in 2015. It's already been 10 years, and it's starting to shrink. By 2040, it's called the elderly dependency ratio, the number of older people compared to workers, is going to just rise dramatically. Now, China's answer to all of this has been automation, robotics, AI, machine learning, all intended to offset the loss of young workers. But demographics have a way of pulling resources away from experimentation, right? An older society has fewer risk takers, fewer startups, and more fiscal pressure to pay for pensions and healthcare. If you're not sure that that's true, well, look to Japan, right? Japan offers a fairly cautionary tale here. Despite world-class institutions and super strong technology, its economy has slowed as demographics basically turn against it because its population too is aging out. China risks the same on a much larger scale and with less wealth per person to cushion the blow. Europe is experiencing a quieter version of the same story, right? The International Labor Organization projects that by 2050, the ratio of older adults to working age adults in Europe and Central Asia will climb from 28 to 43 ratio. That's millions fewer workers and millions more retirees, right? Southern Europe faces the steepest decline. Central Asia, by contrast, still has a younger profile. Europe's response is kind of familiar, right? Keep the older workers employed longer, expand women's participation, open the door to migrants. But the basic reality is that fewer young people are entering the workforce, and that means pensions and healthcare gets more expensive, and that innovation has to depend on the productivity gains rather than population growth. And then there's South Korea. Now, if you want to see the future of a hyper-age society, Korea is where you need to be looking, right? Fertility has collapsed to 0.7 children per woman, the lowest in the world, right? In just a few decades, the working age will fall from nearly 3/4 of the population to barely half. By 2070, almost half of Koreans will be over 65. Unlike the US or, say, Germany, Korea has almost no immigration to balance the decline. Only about 5% of its population is foreign-born. The government has spent staggering amounts of money on pro-natalist programs to convince women to have children. But that is not working, and fertility has only gone lower. So Korea is adapting. It's not like reversing in any particular way. It has one of the highest robot densities in the world, and it's leaning heavily on automation. At the same time, it's experimenting with what's sometimes called the silver economy, industries built around elder care, health technology, and age-friendly products. I mean, the speed of Korea's demographic change is just downright astonishing. What took France nearly 200 years, going from 7% to 20% of the population being over 65, Korea took less than 30 years. That compressed timeline makes it like the frontline laboratory for how societies adapt when demographics moves faster than policy. And when the, you know, the industrialized world ages, Africa is booming, right? It is the continent of the future. By the end of this century, Africa will account for the bulk of the world's working age population. Its demographic growth is staggering. Add to that its reserves of cobalt, lithium, and rare earths, resources critical for technology, and Africa looks like the place where future innovation could ignite. But a large youth population is only a dividend if it's matched with education, governance, and opportunity. Without those, it can just as easily fuel instability. Many African education systems are under-resourced, governance remains fragile in places, and climate pressures could easily make things worse. And the potential here is enormous. Urbanization, rising education levels, and investment could make Africa the innovation hub of the late 21st century. The question is whether that investment comes from within Africa or outside, and whose values and standards get embedded along the way. I would posit that if you get investment from Western nations, the culture for, you know, what technology in Africa and, you know, will look like going forward is going to be very different from if the funding comes from China. So who's in the room, right? And this is where demographics meets internet fragmentation directly. The regions with the youngest populations are not the ones showing up in open standards bodies, right? Look at the latest W3C's diversity report. Seats are still dominated by North America, Europe, and parts of Asia. Africa and South Asia barely register. ISO, you can argue whether or not it's an open standards organization. I would say it's not, but I know other people disagree. But it tells a similar story. More than 3/4 of its members are from developing countries. They're very proud about that. But many lack the resources to actually participate actively. ISO is regularly running capacity building programs to try and close that gap. You could say membership there is broad, but influence is not. And this absence matters, right? Standards aren't just bureaucratic exercises, despite what being in, you know, a year of working group meetings might feel like. The standards shape how the internet functions, what gets prioritized, and who benefits. If youthful regions aren't in the room when those rules are set, they'll inherit an internet designed by someone else and somewhere else. Meanwhile, China is filling the vacuum here. It is investing heavily in African infrastructure and digital networks, building regional values of change that may shape defaults long before African voices are fully present in open standards. I mean, even as the internet fragments politically and technologically, demographics tie us together to, you know, to an extent. Aging countries will depend on migration and remote work links to tap into youthful labor pools. Younger countries will increasingly provide the engineers and operators who will sustain global platforms. Standards bodies may eventually reflect new population centers, but institutional change kind of does lag with the demographic reality. The people who build the internet of the future are increasingly in Africa and Southeast Asia, but the institutions that write the rules still reflect, you know, yesterday's demographics, and that disconnect's going to, I think it's going to really define the next era of internet governance. So to wrap up, demographics do move slowly, but man, they are relentless. You know, there's that old saying, you cannot make a baby in 1 month with 9 women, right? It takes as long as it takes. The U.S. risks losing its edge through education and immigration failures. China is aging before it secures long-term prosperity. Europe faces a slow, gentle decline. South Korea, that's not a slow, gentle decline. It's already living through hyper-aging. Africa, totally the wild card here. It's the one region where the people to build next internet, if that's where they are, if it can turn that population growth into that sort of that true dividend, if they can actually get people to the table, if they can get their education sorted out, governance, et cetera. The tension here is actually pretty clear. The regions with human capital to build the future internet aren't in the standard room today. Others, especially China, are investing heavily in shaping what those people will inherit. So if you want to know what kind of internet we'll have in the decades ahead, don't just look at the protocols or supply chains. Look at the people, look at where they are, who is investing in them, because that's where the future of innovation is going to lie. Thanks again. We've got one more episode in this series of thinking about internet fragmentation in the future, and I hope you continue to subscribe and listen in. Thanks for your time. And that's it for this week's episode of the Digital Identity Digest. If it helps make things a little clearer, or at least a little more interesting, share it with a friend or colleague and connect with me on LinkedIn at HL Flanagan. And if you enjoyed the show, do be sure to subscribe and leave me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find the written full post at sphericalcowconsulting.com. Now stay curious, stay engaged, and let's get these conversations going.